Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. President Biden and GOP lawmakers not budging, writes the Wall Street Journal headline, as debt ceiling meeting convenes. The debt ceiling conversation in the White House is part of the larger maneuvering between the parties these last weeks when it looks like a run-up or an actual campaign for 2024. In this particular instance, it's so difficult to convey this in a summary sentence. I'm going to rely on my colleague Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board who writes political economics, to explain why it is that suddenly there's a deadline. Washington hates deadlines. They love the idea that they exist, but we're not going to meet it. We're certainly not going to rush ourselves when we're doing politics. Right now, the deadline for a negotiation between the president and the Congress, chiefly the House of Representatives Majority Leader and Speaker of the House, Mr. McCarthy, that negotiation has a deadline of June 1st that, if I read not only between the lines, but I read the line itself, nobody quite believes. Joe, what is the June 1st deadline about? Why are they pushing this to us as if when we reach June 1st, there's a catastrophe?
Well, June 1st has emerged as the deadline here because that is when Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has announced that the government is likely to bump up against the current debt ceiling. And so after that date, having exhausted all of the borrowing authority that the Treasury currently has, they wouldn't be able to issue any additional debt beyond the current level. And so that would potentially have big implications. And that is why this has ended up becoming the deadline. It's worth pointing out at the outset that there is a real question about how much of a deadline that actually is, because certainly government will have revenue coming in so they can continue paying the interest on the debt. It's not as if this forces a government shutdown. And because of that, in theory, there should be mechanisms by which Secretary Yellen could deploy resources to avoid the default, which is the actual event that people are afraid of once this deadline is reached. So it's kind of a weird situation with the debt ceiling, because you never know exactly when the limit will be. It depends on what the revenues have been so far and exactly how far along in its borrowing program that the government is. And then you don't know. Also, it partly depends on how much new debt the government needs to issue. I mean, if they announce tomorrow that for the foreseeable future, they were not going to spend any money on discretionary spending until this is resolved, you could potentially go, much longer before you hit the debt limit.
What we have here, though, is two people or two parties talking past each other. The Biden administration has in train an enormous amount of cash to spend. I believe that's the Inflation Reduction Act. There's probably some more money coming from the COVID years. Every time I think that's over, more money shows up. The Republican Party, posturing for elections in 2024, wants to make cuts. Now, the cuts are so modest to be non-existent. So have both parties settled in on the idea that the debt cannot be contained and that the interest on the debt will continue to eat into the budget so that therefore all the discretionary spending is at risk indefinitely? Have both sides accepted that fact?
Actually, I don't think both sides have, which is a key part of the conflict that's emerging between the Republicans and the Democrats right now, because I think that the Republicans actually do seem to believe that the debt ceiling fight is an opportunity to start, introducing some discipline into the budget process, even if it's very modest discipline, because, I mean, from their perspective, the problem is that this is just the debt ceiling. This is not a budget. So you're limited in the concessions that you could extract anyway. But they do think that it's realistic that you could use this political fight to set you up for some restraint once you get to the budget process, which is precisely why the Democrats are resisting. But the key difference is that the Republicans have actually managed to pass a bill in the House. So the Republicans can now more or less agree on what their goals are and what tactics they are prepared to deploy in this debt ceiling fight in order to get to that goal. And that is exposing how disorganized the Democrats were. And the only real strategy that the Democrats had going into this was assuming that the Republicans would be so chaotic and ungovernable by the Republican leadership that it wouldn't matter and the Republicans would end up caving to the sort of debt limit increase that the Democrats want. And since that is not happening, that's creating a lot of this political impasse now. And the problem is actually on the Democratic side, where they don't appear to have had a plan for how they were going to respond to or bargain with an organized Republican caucus.
All right. The fog settles on my brain here. So I want to ask the big question for the rest of the world. Does this touch the markets? Because the markets are not happy with the banking crisis, with the Federal Reserve, with the bear market. Is the debt a threat to any of that?
Well, I mean, certainly the level of the debt is a long-term problem because it speaks to the fiscal stability of the U.S. Short-term, I think that a lot of people around the world are worried about the possibility that if the limit is not increased, it would trigger a default. And I think that a default on U.S. government treasury bonds, which are the world's risk-free asset, would create all kinds of turmoil. And here I want to point out that Secretary Yellen and Fed Chairman Jerome Powell have been singularly unhelpful in stoking those concerns with all of their catastrophizing about this. I mean, Jerome Powell, at his latest press conference last week, hyped up the negative consequences of not increasing the debt limit instead of what he should have said, which is that the Fed would be prepared to offer emergency liquidity to smooth the market no matter what happens. So he missed an opportunity to deliver a reassuring message. Secretary Yellen, for political reasons within the Biden administration, keeps pushing a catastrophizing message about the consequences of not increasing the limit instead of saying that the Treasury stands ready to do whatever it has to do to move money around to make sure that the interest on the existing debt is paid. So you can't blame global markets for being nervous when that's the kind of foolhardy message that they are getting from the most senior U.S. officials.
Treasury got itself involved in the banking crisis, so I want to use this small bridge to cross into, is there a banking crisis? Now, bank stocks are declining, Joe. Some have declined catastrophically. I'll use the buzzword of the moment. Others have recovered after an apparent decline. There is the general comment that the market's not going anywhere except down, as long as bank stocks are sinking. What is it that is telling investors banks are not trustworthy, and how can it be corrected?
Well, I think that the first phase of the bank panic that started with Silicon Valley Bank back in March seems to be easing up. And that first phase was deposit flight from institutions that depositors were worried about. It does seem to be the case that in recent weeks, that situation is stabilized. So we no longer have the situation we had back in March, where you had depositor runs of various speeds happening at some potentially vulnerable banks. And I think that that's good news because those depositor runs can be so destabilizing. But you had the separate issue of the stability of banks' balance sheets. And that problem has not gone away because the underlying phenomenon of a long period of ultra-low interest rates followed by a very rapid increase in interest rates I think it's going to be destabilizing for a lot of people in the economy. Banks are going to have to reorganize their balance sheets to accommodate for that. Non-bank institutions like pension funds or insurers are going to have to be mindful of the consequences of that shift. Individual companies and households are going to be dealing with that. I hope that this is not going to result in further rounds of a bank panic. But we should not assume that the economic or financial turmoil is over just because there are a lot of people who have to reconfigure a lot of different balance sheets now that interest rates have changed as they have.
Is it appropriate to connect the bank crisis that we have, the one we can see, the failure of several significant banks? I believe the biggest failures recently, maybe in memory, in terms of dollars, to connect that to the Federal Reserve and to come back to blaming Powell again? Does that work, Joe?
Yes. I mean, this is all absolutely a consequence of the fact that the Fed, under both Powell and his predecessors, Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke, held interest rates at an unnaturally low level for more than a decade. And that was true even when the Fed attempted to raise rates in 2018 and 19. They waited far too long to do that and never really got as high as they should have done before the pandemic hit. And so that has just led to a lot of distortions in the allocation of capital and credit in the economy, both in the US and around the world. And that process has to reverse itself now. The whole point of the rapid interest rate increases that the Fed has executed over the past year is to try to encourage that process to reverse somewhat, even if the Fed doesn't always say so explicitly. They contributed to the distortions with their policies, and now their correction of that policy error is going to create its own challenges.
So I understand that the Fed is now pausing. That isn't a reprieve. And therefore, the banks will remain vulnerable depending upon the Fed's decision in the next and the next and the next meeting. And Mr. Powell knows that raising rates will likely lead to more bank doubts. Is that correct?
Yes. Now, to be clear, we don't know exactly what the Fed is going to do in the future, although they are starting to signal that they are done raising rates at this point after the quarter percentage point increase that they did last week. And the real question is going to become when they might start cutting rates again. Investors are currently assuming, last I checked, that this is going to happen sometime by September. But again, if the markets turn out to be wrong about that, or if inflation stays persistently high and the Fed finds that it needs to keep rates higher for longer than markets are going to expect, that could have implications as well, because that will mean that the pain of these higher rates is not going to end as quickly as a lot of investors have been hoping.
Joseph Sternberg, he's in London. He writes Political Economics. We began with saying that Mr. Powell had new lows of approval from the American people. And we end by saying Mr. Powell has some decisions to make in future that could make him more unpopular. But then again, that might be his job. He's independent of the political process. We're headed back to London, life in London, where Joe lives. And Joe's observing the post-coronation London. First, we're going to begin with regrets by the Metropolitan Police Chief. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.